Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. A lot to get to today. Of course, we're going to talk about the indictment of former President Donald Trump. My sister is... Hello, Miranda. She's off camera, but she's in studio for a live edition of Florida Report. We're going to talk about how Ron DeSantis is factoring into all of this, and is Trump at Mar-a-Lago or not? So we'll also discuss that angle of this story. Also, our friend Jonathan Cho... He needs to be careful, okay? And I keep telling him that like I'm his mother, even though I'm like 10 years younger than him. But, you know, he's always out and he's, you know, covering the homeless crisis. Well, some guy threatened to kill him with a baseball bat, and that guy got arrested by SPD. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that story and how it was covered by the local media, because there's an interesting angle in there. I also, if you watched, we did a our regular monthly live Q&A for subscribers earlier in the day. So subscribers will know this, but for those of you who are not subscribers, why aren't you? No, I'm kidding. We still love you. But you would have missed this. And so I want to share with you that starting Monday, we're expanding the show. So starting Monday, the show will now be live at noon, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays. And so it's going to be a lot of fun, a different sort of way to consume the show. So you can watch the show live. If you listen on podcast, it'll still go to podcast after the live airing. So you can still listen to it later in the day. But it will air live across all platforms, Facebook, YouTube, Patreon, Locals, four days a week. With the podcast also posted after the fact. And then we'll do a special Sunday show just for subscribers, a more laid back version of the show on Sundays with important interviews and conversations. So we're going to be doing five shows a week, Sunday to Thursday, and it's going to be amazing. I also teased for subscribers on the live Q&A today that we have hired an executive producer for the podcast who I think is going to just take the content to the next level. We're going to be able to get back to, I think, some of my core of journalism and breaking stories and chasing down leads. I'm not going to tell you who that person is, although some of you might be able to guess, but that announcement is going to come either on Sunday or Monday. I haven't decided yet. But lots of exciting things happening. This is our last show in this studio right when we're done today. We're tearing this all down. In fact, it's funny because the only thing that's not torn down is just what you can see on camera. And like everything else has already been moved out. So it's just like, we're going to do the show, stop taping, and then tear down and reset back up. So it's just a lot going on. So if my voice sounds just like very stressed and frantic, that's why. But it's good stuff. It's exciting stuff. I just need to get through this weekend, get through our first live show on Monday and everything that comes along with that. But thank you. Special thank you to subscribers who've helped support the show so much that we can afford to bring someone on full time to be a producer, to keep spreading. And it's not just about growing the podcast. To me, it's never been about just being a podcast. It's a mission, trying to get people into this sort of, we call it team sanity, team common sense, and get people who are reasonable, right, left, and center to start speaking up for themselves. And so the more eyeballs, the more ears that the show reaches, I think we can really have an impact. And so this is the beginning of, I think, a really important transition for the show, but also for the movement. All right, let's talk about Donald Trump, shall we? I know some of you are like, no, I don't want to discuss this story. It was interesting. We were coming in. Randy, you have that picture, right? I'll have you send it to me. We were coming in, driving in, and there was this woman with this giant banner over the interstate that said, MAGA is about love. Is that what it said? Yeah. MAGA is about love. And I have to imagine that she was up there in response to the indictment of former President Donald Trump. And, you know, look, I'm going to bifurcate two things. So you guys know I don't particularly like Donald Trump. I don't want him to be president again. I'd rather he not even run in the first place. But I also have been very clear that, you know, I won't say it's a witch hunt, but I will say that just give it a rest already. I mean, just let the old man, you know, go to Mar-a-Lago and golf his days out on this earth, because I don't think it's healthy. It's tough because I'm conflicted on a lot of fronts, because I'm a law and order person. if you break the law, I don't think anyone's above the law. And I certainly don't believe a former president is above the law or a politician is above the law, especially. I mean, for people that we give power, they more than anyone else need to be held accountable. So look, if the man broke the law, then fine. But for Democrats who are celebrating this, I don't think they realize the actual ramifications of it. So I'll get into that in a moment. But first, if you're not familiar with what happened in the indictment. So this has to do with the alleged hush payment to porn star Stormy Daniels that came in the closing, I think, days or weeks or months of the 2016 presidential campaign. So she, the gist of it is she gets $130,000 and agrees to say that she didn't have sex or not with Donald Trump in 2006 while he was married. That's the accusation. And so Trump had classified that as a business expense. And so the Manhattan DA's office had put this up to a grand jury. Charges, I think, typically remain sealed. But the Manhattan district attorney had said that Trump falsified business records. So we can assume that that's what the charges would be. Carries a maximum prison sentence of 4 years. And so they put this up to a grand jury. Grand jury indicts. Trump comes out. He blasted the indictment as politically motivated. He said, this is a political persecution and election interference at the highest level in history. The Democrats have lied, cheated, and stolen in their obsession with trying to get Trump. But now they've done the unthinkable, indicted a completely innocent person in an act of blatant election interference. So, look, I would like Trump to just kind of go away. And I think that this does the exact opposite of that. I think it galvanizes his base in a way that actually could help his 2024 campaign. Now, if he's in, I don't know how this would work, like if he's convicted and then he's in prison. I would assume that he's not able to continue a campaign while that's all going on. So I don't really know the implications of it there. But I really do think that this is going to make Trump even more of sort of a martyr for that cause. And so for Democrats who are celebrating it, I'm like, I don't think that this gets him in the way that you think it does. And so I guess I don't understand that. At the same time, you know, like I said, I'm a law and order person. If there is evidence that he broke the law, then, you know, you know, proceed with that as is. But as Ron DeSantis, and we'll talk about this on Florida Report later, Ron DeSantis pointed out in a tweet that you have this Manhattan DA who has been super soft on crime, like on all sorts of crime, like, you know, lowering punishments. Yet with Trump, it's like throw the book at him. And so there's this real discrepancy in kind of the respect and the heft of the rule of law. And so that's why some people are saying that it's certainly politically motivated. We don't know, you know, if Trump's going to turn himself in. It sounds like he is going to surrender himself over to the Manhattan DA's office in Manhattan. That's going to be an absolute circus of a media circus out there. I can't even imagine. And that's usually how these things work. I don't think that's particularly special treatment. I think when you have these white collar, alleged white collar crimes, that you have an agreement like, oh, my client will surrender themselves at X amount of time. But this is pretty wild stuff. I mean, to think about the former president, current candidate for president of the United States in 2024, having to surrender himself to the Manhattan DA's office. Absolutely wild. Now, what is the response going to be from people when this happens, which sounds like early next week is when he's going to turn himself over? You know, I think about January 6th and the response when he lost the election and they were going to certify it. And Trump himself, on his own social media platform, he put out this statement that I really don't think is going to help things, but maybe that's what he's hoping for. He said, what kind of person can charge another person, in this case, a former president of the United States who got more votes than any sitting president in history, which is actually true. I had to look that up because it sounded like a lie, but that's actually true. And leading candidate by far for the Republican Party nomination with a crime when it is known by all that no crime has been committed, and also known that potential death and destruction in such a false charge could be catastrophic for our country. That's insane for him to say, given what happened on January 6th. And so to me, that is absolutely poking the bear. And I mean, not particularly a surprise, but I do worry about what protests, riots, et cetera, could look like if and when he turns himself in or is convicted or has to go to jail, et cetera. Trump says the only person who would do that is a degenerate psychopath that truly hates the USA. Yeah. Again, I'm super conflicted on all of this because I have to try to separate how I feel about Trump from the legality of what's going on, the merits of the charges. And then I also have to separate all of that from whether I feel like it's actually good for the country or not. So if I try to take those things one at a time, I don't like Trump. I don't really know about the merits of the charges. I mean, it sounds like he paid the woman, you know, and she says that they did it. And that's what was hush money. I'm not familiar with how the law works when it comes to it being a business expense, et cetera. And then the last thing, which I think is the most important, is I think it's bad for the country. I think it's bad for the country. I think it's bad for politics. I don't think it's going to have a particularly positive outcome for a variety of reasons. And so for that reason, I don't think it's worth it. I don't think it's worth it for the Manhattan DA's office to pursue this. And so for that reason, I do think it's politically motivated. And also knowing, like Ron DeSantis said, how many crimes that office just lets slide and the real lack of order, lack of respect for the rule of law. So I'm worried about how this is all going to play out. And again, we'll talk on Florida Report about Ron DeSantis' response to all of this, because it kind of puts him in an interesting position. You know, Trump has been very mean to Ron DeSantis as of late. And then Trump is a Florida resident. And so there was this question about, okay, is Ron DeSantis going to come to his defense? Is he going to just leave him flailing because he's, you know, been kind of mean to him and is a 2024 opponent? So we'll talk about what Ron DeSantis tweeted, because I thought it was kind of an interesting, his effort to balance the situation. It was very interesting. He was very careful with his wording. So that's what's going on with the former president of the United States. There is a lot to come on this story, but I'd be really, really interested to hear your guys' thoughts on this, because I know a lot of you are kind of similar to me, with not a big fan of Trump, but you really think Democrats have just totally overdone it over the past 5-6 years. So I'd be interested to hear your comments, and I can read them on Monday's show. Man, I got to talk about our friend Jonathan Cho again. So, look, I think Jonathan does great work, and I consider him a friend. You know, after he left Como, we've been in touch a lot. We've had him on a lot, et cetera. I've been, like I said, his defender in chief as he gets cut out of these media press conferences, which I have a public disclosure request pending on that topic, which I hope is going to be very fruitful. I'm scheduled to get it next week, so I'll have to follow up on that story. But Jonathan Cho also puts himself in some really precarious situations, which is at times part of being a journalist. I mean, he, the way that he does things, he's got his camera and he really gets up in people's faces, and he's doing this at homeless camps and on the street. And, you know, he had a guy chase him with, what was it? Was it an axe? Yeah, with an axe the other week by City Hall, and Jonathan keeps filming, and he's like, I'm like, Jonathan, just drop the camera and run. He had that woman who, she was caught in this viral video. She was a black woman being racist toward an Asian woman, saying all sorts of terrible things. And Jonathan Cho went to her house to, like, confront her about it. And it just was very persistent. And I was like, you need to leave. In my head, I was like, Jonathan, leave. And so anyway, he was downtown Seattle and he was talking, you know, and he was filming this homeless person who was just doing drugs out in the open, because that's what happens in downtown Seattle. When you can kind of hear, and you'll hear in the video and I'll play it, like kind of a warning, like to watch out. And allegedly what happened is this guy came up behind him, like threatening with a baseball bat. And then Jonathan is filming the rest.
Hey, you better get out of here.
Oh, shit. This guy right there. Right there. He has a baseball bat. He came charging at me. This guy right here. I have every right to be here.
That's invasion of privacy.
Nope, I'm talking those guys. You're coming at me with a baseball bat. This guy's out of control.
Yeah. So anyway, then Jonathan calls the police, and the Seattle Police Department shows up, and Jonathan documented that as well.
Thank you.
What, did you guys start a conversation? Like, why?
I just ran. I ran. I ran across the street.
You were, you know, pacing around the area, talking, like interviewing people.
Exactly.
Okay.
But
what would you like to do in this case?
Press full charge. This man literally nearly assaulted me.
What charge? You want to file assault charge?
Yeah, this guy came in with a baseball bat. He should be arrested.
Okay.
So what I found, I mean, first of all, besides, I need Jonathan Cho, I text him, I said, you need to be careful. He needs security guards or something. But also, no story is worth getting hurt. And so, like, Jonathan, if you're listening, I'd like you to just back away a little bit sometimes. But what I thought was interesting was how the other media outlets covered this, because you know, not only is this someone getting threatened with a baseball bat, but this is a journalist being threatened in the course of trying to do their job, an independent journalist. Like, that's a big deal. Can you imagine if it were a King 5 journalist or a Seattle Times journalist? So Cairo7, as an example, writes a little blurb on this, and they say, man arrested in Seattle after threatening to kill person with a baseball bat. A man was arrested Wednesday after threatening to kill another man with a baseball bat, according to the Seattle Police Department. At about 11:40 a.m., officers were flagged down near the intersection of 3rd Avenue and James Street by a 44-year-old man who said another man had threatened to kill him with a baseball bat. After police reviewed footage of the incident, a 47-year-old man was taken into custody and booked in King County Jail. The bat, which had Mac Attack written on the side, was also confiscated. So they just called Jonathan Cho a 44-year-old man. Like, they don't even specify that. And Jonathan Cho had put out this video, and it was, like, all over the place. And so, I mean, Cairo knows it was Jonathan Cho. But, of course, they're not going to say, like, independent journalist was filming a story on homelessness and somebody threatened him with a bat, or even say his name. They say they were flagged down by a 44-year-old man. Which I think is absurd. I think the fact that it was Jonathan Cho, who's been, you know, targeted, who's been harassed, who's been maligned, who people accuse of being, you know, on the right, the fact that it was Jonathan Cho is relevant. But of course, they leave it out of the story. And, you know, the Seattle Police Department did that in its blotter post as well. They have, like, basically a blog, a police department blog, where they post about notable cases. And they also just said it was a 44-year-old male victim. So that could have just been Cairo7 just pulling it from the blotter and just justifying it that way. But look, I mean, it was Jonathan Cho. I think that's relevant. I think it's relevant that they left that detail out. And we'll see what happens with this case. But that guy had a warrant, booked into jail. The Mac Attack bat, however, is off the streets, so that's good news. So I try to watch pertinent hearings that are going on in Olympia. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to watch every single hearing, every legislative session, but this clip was sent to me by someone who thankfully was watching it. And it was the committee meeting for Senate Ways and Means. So they're discussing budgetary issues. This happened yesterday afternoon. And there's a lot of bills to be discussed, and there was public comment on some of them. And one of them was in gross substitute House Bill 1469. And I hadn't heard too much about this one. My gist of it from reading, and the way they write these bills is so freaking confusing, but the gist of the bill, and it's a Democrat-supported bill, I think is meant to protect essentially transgender individuals who might come to Washington to seek gender-affirming care that's protected here, or abortion or reproductive rights that are protected here, but not another state. So that if another state comes, like, searching for, oh, did that person get, you know, gender transition for their child, or did that person get an abortion and travel from our state where those things are against the law, and we're going to, you know, get information so we can prosecute them or so we can hold them accountable. And it basically makes it so that they can't do that. So that's the gist of it. Again, if you want to go take a look, it's engrossed substitute House Bill 1469. So they're in the Senate Ways and Means Committee, and it's run by Democrats because Democrats are in the majority, so they run the committees, and they're having public testimony, and there is this individual, I don't know their gender pronouns, maybe they say it, and I'm going to, should I play the whole thing? I think I'm going to play the whole thing. It's, okay, I might interrupt a few times because it's several minutes, but I think it is so indicative of how one side approaches the debate on this issue. So when you go testify in Olympia, the rules are supposed to be the same for everyone, that you have a set amount of time, and then you're done. And I usually see it go off without a hitch. You know, people get up there, they give their spiel, or they do it virtually, and then their time is up and they move on. But on this issue in particular, and I think for a good segment of trans activists, they're completely unable to not throw a temper tantrum and, like, want to get their way in a very, very immature way. And it was interesting to watch this play out in front of Democrats who support this policy and to see this person behave in this way. So I'm just going to play the whole exchange because I think it just speaks volumes for how this debate goes. At the beginning, this person kind of asks for special treatment because they say that they have a disability, which I'm totally fine with that. I mean, that's fine. It's really towards the end that things get a little crazy.
Before my time begins, can I ask a question about, like, rules and things? Sure.
I haven't been able to go through the official disability accommodation process, but because it's like really expensive, but I have like a speech impediment. So if there's any accommodation that the chair would deem appropriate to grant for that today, I would appreciate it.
We're happy to give you more time if that's what you're asking for.
Yeah, as you see appropriate.
Okay.
I promise my line of questioning is relevant. To that point, the only other question I had before my time begins is just if it is okay if I ask questions and use my time to hear answers from the committee?
No, okay. You're here to give us your testimony on the bill.
Totally, that's fine. That was gonna inform what I was gonna say. This is my first time on the Capitol Hill.
Can you pull a microphone up?
Yeah, yep.
Thank you.
My legal surname is Armstrong. I won't disclose my legal first name if not needed because I am a transgender individual and I face significant security risk every day of my life just for my gender identity. As my fellow testifier has said, it is a significant change to our lives since these bills have started to be introduced. If it's not obvious, I'm here to express support for ESHB 1469. Real quickly, I do want to acknowledge that we are all on stolen land. I would like to give and receive feedback. However, I cannot receive the feedback per what you had just mentioned in regards to the means and ways of this bill, and I am not here to entertain unproductive rebuttals or questions that challenge this bill predicated on the grounds of debating the legal moral implications of legally protected provisions of care to people seeking abortion and gender affirmations, regardless of the state of residence from which they come. So to that point, all of the people who have spoken previously that oppose this bill had very little to say as to the monetary aspect of the bill, but predicated their arguments on legal or moral grounds. Furthermore, my own personal research, which I will happily follow up with post hearing, shows that each of those three individuals, or four, I may have lost count, I'm a bit flustered, have significant ties to right-wing hate organizations and are likely not acting in good faith as people that want to express real community support for what they have said here today. As I conclude the portion of rebutting the claims made by the detractors of this bill, I want to point out that I have yet to hear in the line of questioning that started after the information was given about this bill any real significant fiscal objections to this bill that include any good faith proposals for amendments or ways of funding the ways by which this bill would be adjudicated and enforced. The reality is that based on the 5 hours I've sat here as I've missed an entire day of work at my own personal expense and paid gas money to get here, the people that are silent in the lack of support for this bill are noticeably not here despite significant personal sacrifice that I came to say. There are a lot of ways that we can fund this bill. It is a Ways and Means Committee meeting, so if anyone had anything to say in significant amount in regards to the ways or means of funding this bill and enforcing it, then I would happily have addressed those rebuttals, but I heard none. Brief statements were made, but they were all, again, predicated on a religious basis that seeks to argue the moral and legal implications of providing care to transgender people, regardless of their age or the state that they come from. Finally, I will say that out of all the things that I found egregious about lies that have been told in regards to transgender people, is the seemingly unchallenged misinformation
please,
that abounded.
Please wrap up.
Yep. In conclusion, all I have to say is this. If there are any senators here today, and I'm sure there are, that are planning on voting against this provision, just know that in the final hours of registering for testimony, it became clear that efforts were made to show a disproportionate amount of support for people that have spoken against this bill. So a lot of con votes were registered repetitively, and in the final hours, me and my community in this state were able to rally support to outweigh those votes, such okay. that the total testimony came to 70% in support of this bill and 30%.
We all have-
They've cut the mics. You're going to hear some chunks of silence, and then you'll hear, you know, the mics come back on and a little bit of shouting.
That suggests that most of
you to stop. We've heard your testimony. We've given you a lot of time. We need you to stop. We understand your perspective. We've heard it. We have access to all the data that you're talking about. And no, you need to stop because we need to hold a fair hearing. Thank you very, very much for joining us today.
I hope you feel like your primary campaigns are well-financed. You crossed the line. I yield my time.
All right.
Thank you.
So if you couldn't catch that, the transgender person says, I hope you feel that your primary campaigns are well-financed because you've crossed a line. I yield my time. First of all, you have no time left to yield. That's not how this works. It was funny because their whole testimony was like just using big words that it didn't mean anything. Like I could not follow it at all. I could not follow the point that they were trying to make whatsoever. And then at the end, they go, I yield my time. Just, how do you not totally break down laughing? But I hope that this sends a message to these Democrats that you're trying to please the transgender community. You're trying to pass all these bills. We've discussed a few of them, bills that, you know, I don't know that I have a strong opinion on this one, but, you know, I've had strong opinions on other ones, like the bill that would essentially be government-sanctioned kidnapping of your kids and allow youth from other states or other places or even Washington to go seek shelter and say, I'm seeking shelter because my parents won't let me get gender-affirming care. And then they get to be, like, hidden away from their parents, which is crazy. But I hope this is a message to Democrats that you're never going to satisfy these people. You are never going to satisfy this fringe. And I'm not saying all transgender people are fringe. I'm saying transgender people who act like that, who say things like that, are fringe, and they do account for the loudest voice in the room. And so here you have a bunch of lawmakers who support this policy, who support transgender individuals and transgender rights, and still, because they couldn't rant incessantly and go way past their time, interrupt, scream, had to have their mic cut, and because they had to walk away and we're told your time is done, throws an absolute fit. I hope your primary campaigns are well financed. You've crossed a line. Crossed a line how? They're supporting this bill. They support you as a transgender individual because they wouldn't sit there and let you rant for however long you wanted like a child. You're going to say, oh, I hope you're going to get primaried by someone. So I hope it's a wake-up call for Democrats who are just always falling over themselves to please the loudest voices in the room on these issues. You will never please them. You will never do enough for them. And this is Exhibit A of that. As you guys know, I've been a spokesperson for Eastside Weight Loss Clinic for about 3 months now. I am down 32 pounds from when I began, which has been absolutely amazing. And I have been hearing from so many of you who got on the program, you know, heard me talk about it for like maybe a month, 2 months. You're like, okay, I'm going to do it. And are getting great results. I just saw someone on my Patreon page who said that they're down 9 pounds in 12 days, which is awesome. And that's kind of similar to where I was. You really see it melt off the first couple weeks. And I always tell people like, and as I've been telling you guys, it's not easy. The first 2 weeks were so hard. And then the 60 days goes by pretty quickly after that. And you really have to stick to it. And I think that's what's been important to me about pitching the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan is I did it before they became a sponsor so I could see if it worked. And then I've been really honest with you guys that, yeah, it's hard. Yeah, you have to eat less. Like, I couldn't eat what I'd been eating when I gained 40 pounds during the pandemic. But if you're able to stick to a structure, kind of treat it like a job, you have a handy app where you can get help from Dr. Coogan and the team at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. If you're just, you know, hit a plateau or you have some questions. And so for someone who maybe like me put on a little extra weight over a short period of time, I do think this is a really good way to shed it. And the nice thing is that you can do a 15-minute consultation for free with Dr. Coogan to see if it's right for you, if it's something that you think you might be able to do and might be able to stick to. And then we have this whole community we're building of people who have started the program. And so I always tell people, feel free to email me if you need to commiserate or you've hit a wall and you just need some support and enthusiasm. So I'm here for you guys. So if you're thinking about it, if you've been thinking about it, just schedule a 15-minute consultation with Dr. Coogan. 15 minutes of your life. If you don't want to do it at the end of 15 minutes, then it's not a big deal. But you've made a call and you inquired and you can maybe decide later. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. That's EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Dr. Ryan Coogan, D.C. Results may vary. It's Friday. That means it's time for our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Hey.
Hi.
Nice to have you here. I was speaking at an event last night, and one of the questions was, can we get a live Florida report?
Yeah, we didn't give them a live Florida report, but...
No, you know, you'd had a couple drinks by then.
It's true.
I didn't want you put on the spot. I had you come in from Florida to help with the studio move. It's just free manual labor. I guess it's not free, but...
No.
And then we're doing some other things. But so we're still going to do a Florida report. We haven't decided which day yet since Friday is going away.
Yeah.
But we're still going to do it. So I'm sure people will ask me that. We just have to figure it out still. We were talking on the podcast earlier about what's going on with Donald Trump.
Yes.
And I know there's like, where is he? You know, it sounds like he's in Florida still, but that he's planning to turn himself into the Manhattan DA. But it puts Ron DeSantis in an interesting position.
Yeah.
Because it's his like possible 2024 nemesis. Yeah. And also Trump's been an ass to him.
Yeah.
And so he could like dance on his grave, you know, news of his indictment. Or he could be like, we'll help, you know, hand him over. So read what DeSantis said, because I thought it was interesting. He chose his words very carefully.
He did. So DeSantis tweeted, the weaponization of the legal system to advance a political agenda turns the rule of law on its head. It is un-American. The Soros-backed Manhattan district attorney has consistently bent the law to downgrade felonies and to excuse criminal misconduct, yet now he is stretching the law to target political opponent. Florida will not assist in the extradition request given to the questionable circumstances at issue with this Soros-backed Manhattan prosecutor and his political agenda.
Yeah, so he definitely gives his base a little red meat, you know, talking about George Soros, et cetera. Doesn't mention Trump by name.
No.
Does not have Trump in there. And then also he's saying we're not going to assist. I don't think they have to, and I don't think anybody expects them to.
No.
So I think that's kind of a non-issue. So he gets some points for kind of saying we won't do this when it doesn't really matter anyway because Trump's turning himself in yeah. Manhattan. Doesn't say Trump's name and then, you know, tries to play to the base by saying George Soros back prosecutor, yeah. Which I'm not saying that's not true. I'm just saying he does that very intentionally. So it's like this long, convoluted kind of tweet where he's dancing around all sorts of eggshells, but like trying to like stay on top politically speaking.
Yeah.
But I guess you have, and we talked about this, you have a lot of friends in Florida that are big Trump fans.
Yes.
But also, and that kind of struggle with, do I like DeSantis too? What do you think this does for them? Like Trump's indictment, does it make them like him more?
Honestly, I think that there is definitely going to be Trump supporters that anything that happens to Trump, whether he's proven guilty or however many times he's indicted, they're just going to love him more and more. They're just going to back him more and more. But I do think that majority, especially with my friends, majority of people are just, you know, they're just pretty strong Republicans and they're not necessarily Trump fans, but they did like him. But I think that they are going to have a little bit of a struggle when it comes to who they're going to vote for if DeSantis does go up against Trump. I think DeSantis' response was very calculated because you're right. He didn't really do anything that would make Trump supporters not like him or like him. I do think that he has to be really careful moving forward because he does need to gain the support of those Trump supporters if he does want to beat Trump. So that's going to be a little bit of a tricky thing for him. I'm not really sure how he's going to do it, but this is a good start for him in the sense that he's like, I'm not going to give Trump away, but
Yeah, I'm not going to send like the state police to like corral him up, but yeah. Nobody expected him to do that anyway.
No.
The whole situation, Trump DeSantis, is weird. You know, Trump being so petty with DeSantis all of a sudden, which is like obvious. So I guess we'll see what happens. Florida is going to be a fast. That's why we can't let go of Florida Report.
No, no.
Because that's where everything is happening.
We get all the good content that comes out of Florida. And he even has, since the moment that this indictment kind of got announced, his supporters went headed straight to Mar-a-Lago. Like, and there's actually like police have made a statement like you can't double park on the bridge because Mar-a-Lago is actually like a little island and there's a small bridge that connects Mar-a-Lago to the mainland. And apparently all of his supporters are heading out, blocking the bridge, you know, trying to show support. So it'll be interesting. It'll probably turn into a little bit of a circus down there too, whether he's in Mar-a-Lago or not. I don't know.
But. Yeah, I'm worried about all that. Okay. We are, our lawmakers here are trying to restrict gun rights in Washington state. At the same time, your legislators in Florida are just saying, anyone who wants to carry a gun, well, within reason,
yeah,
go ahead. No permits.
No permits. So now you can do what's called constitutional carry, mm-hmm. Meaning if you legally own a weapon, a gun, you can carry it with you without it, you know, it has to be concealed. You can't, it's not an open carry state. Yet, even though DeSantis has talked about trying to make it an open carry state, but it doesn't sound like the legislature is going to entertain that at all. But for now, if you own a gun legally in Florida, you can carry with you.
Yeah, so you can't, like, you don't need a CPL like we have here, concealed pistol license.
Exactly.
And so it's just night and day from down there to up here. And the argument, you know, their constitutional argument, they're saying, like, it doesn't say you have to have a permit to exercise your Second Amendment right, et cetera. Yeah. And so they're taking a very literal interpretation of the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Also, a little debate afoot. I have a lot of strong opinions about bathroom debates, okay? And about bathrooms in general, so yeah. I'll probably devolve into that. But they have a bill that's been introduced there. We don't really know the level of support it'll get, but that has to do with bathrooms and transgender people.
Yeah, so the WFLA is kind of breaking this down in an article, and I'm going to kind of read a little bit from the article because it explains it very well. Yeah. A Florida bill that would make restrooms exclusive to males and females. So this bill filed in the Florida House and Senate would make it a crime if a person refuses to leave a bathroom that does not match their sex assigned at birth. This bill is dubbed the Safety in Private Spaces Act. It would make it a second degree misdemeanor for people 18 years or older to use a restroom or a changing facility designated for the opposite sex if they refuse to immediately leave when asked. The bill would also require educational institutions to establish disciplinary procedures for violators under the age of 18.
Yeah. So I don't see this happening an awful lot, but you and I were also saying, and I'm sorry, I'm just going to say it, like there's a couple crude questions we had. Like there are people who are born with both parts,
yeah,
and it exempts them.
It does.
Right?
It does. It actually, there's a couple exemptions.
Okay.
For instance, you know, if you're a father who's taking your daughter out to the mall and she's got to use the bathroom and she's a right. minor child, you are allowed to take your daughter into.
Yeah.
The bathroom that she needs to go into. For elderly people that are needing assistance, disabled people, emergencies, custodial maintenance and inspection. And it also does talk about, this bill does not apply to individuals born with genetically or biochemically verifiable disorders of sex development.
Yeah. And then the other thing we were talking about is what if, I mean, first of all, I don't think there's a lot of people who are going to be like, leave the bathroom. but what if you really look like a dude,
yeah,
like how are you gonna know that they're not the actual gender that they're like they were born?
Yeah,
are you gonna be like, whip it out, you know? It doesn't make any sense. There's a lot of problems with it.
It gets to a really tricky place because, like, in order to protect your privacy, you might now be violating somebody else's because now you're asking them to prove what they are.
Yeah, I don't see it coming up very often, but also here's my larger bathroom rant. I just like private bathrooms.
Yeah.
I don't like the stall things. I have pee shyness where I cannot go if someone's next to me listening. It's a problem. Yeah. There's all sorts of weird bladder issues, apparently, because I can't go to the bathroom in water either, which makes boat trips super inconvenient. Wow. There's a lot of stuff today. But I just like the ones where it's like, this is a bathroom.
Yeah.
Whether you're a man, woman, disabled, whatever it is, this is a bathroom. You may use it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know it's not feasible to put that in absolutely everywhere, but I think where it makes sense, just do it. Getting a phone call.
No, it's true.
And so I just prefer private bathrooms anyway. That's why we never have to fight about bathrooms.
It's true. I mean, and honestly, when you go to most public spaces, like a gas station or something like that, there's usually just one bathroom. It's for anybody that's got to use it. And you get your time in there and you lock the door and then you have your privacy and then you get to leave.
Don't have to worry about pee shyness. You don't have to worry about wondering if someone has one part or another or both or none. It's just...
Yeah, I'm not really sure what this is all about. I think this is just another thing to try to keep this conversation in the space of debate for everybody.
It's culture wars. And I think that is something that Republicans, you know, I think I criticize the left a lot for their obsession with identity and just unreasonableness. And I think the right at times leans way too much into the culture wars in a way where they stop being effective politically.
Yeah.
And I think that's silly. I know they're trying to prove a point, but also, like, don't become what you say you hate.
Oh, for sure.
Like a parody of the left. Yeah. So anyway, Miranda, good to see you.
Thank you
for being here.
You're
I appreciate it.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right, we're going to end the show with some of your comments about the shooting in Nashville at the private Christian school. And specifically on the show on Wednesday, I talked about the fact that the shooter was transgender. And, you know, how I feel like there were some people really, really globbing onto that because it's a convenient political talking point on the right. And I'm not saying that I'm not willing to have the conversation about transgenderism, mental health issues that might come along with that. I just think it's a little narrow-minded because kids of all kinds, and I know this person was 28, but that's a relatively young human being. We've seen all sorts of people commit mass shootings. And so, you know, there was sort of this segment of the right on the internet that's like, oh, they did it because they're transgender and transgender people are dangerous. It's like, well, yeah, so are straight people and black people and white people and all sorts of people who've committed atrocities. And I think it distracts from the bigger picture of our kids are just not well. We've got kids that are depressed. They can't form interpersonal relationships because they're stuck on their phones and their devices and they're living in these complete fantasy lands. And they've just been held like fragile little eggs their whole life and shielded from any sort of criticism or bullying. And they can't deal with it and they're lashing out. So I think it just we have an issue with the youth and the next generation that doesn't include issues related to transgenderism. Sure. But we can't just narrow in on that because it's a convenient political talking point. But I wanted to see what you guys had to say. Y wrote on Patreon. I absolutely hate that when any violent crime is committed, the focus is on the perpetrator. We hear their names and see their faces over and over, but never much about the victims or the heroes. Same for police. The media talk over and over about their failures. Pointing out failings is important to improve in the future, but never talk much about their heroism and success either. I'm sick of anyone turning these tragedies into political issues. Wish we could just come together to grieve, mourn, and rally around those who are affected. Yeah, and we completely lack the capacity to do that as a country. I will say, though, and we talked about it on the show on Wednesday, the police acted masterfully there in their response, and it was kind of this redemption for law enforcement after Uvalde, which was a complete and utter failure and an embarrassment for law enforcement. E wrote on Patreon, Twitter said it has taken down thousands of tweets promoting a trans day of vengeance scheduled to occur Saturday in D.C. And that's interesting. And I do agree with Twitter removing tweets that are advocating for or planning acts of violence. Totally agree. But Twitter went a little too far because it was actually suspending and blocking the accounts of some members of the media who were tweeting about this trans day of vengeance. And so, and even Ben Shapiro had tagged Elon Musk on Twitter and said, hey, I'm sure that Twitter didn't mean to do this. We're trying to raise awareness for the fact that people are planning this horrible day of vengeance, and we ought to be able to report on that as people in the media without our accounts being suspended. So that was interesting. But, you know, it's like probably some just algorithm taking things down based on words. So I'm sure it wasn't intentional, but if it was, that's a problem. Let's see. Kyle commented on my opinion that, you know, about how relevant the fact that the shooter was transgender is. Kyle wrote, while I do think many folks are jumping to conclusions based on a smattering of facts and should be careful, I do think that a discussion of the shooter being transgender is warranted. Law-abiding firearm owners are told time and time again they should welcome common sense regulation like red flag laws, but people shy away from discussing the fact that transgender people have a suicide rate 19 times higher than the rest of the population. I don't have the data to fact check that in the moment. I know it's higher, but I don't know if it's 19 times higher. He writes, I believe it's at least worth discussing, especially since so many more kids are identifying as trans or non-binary than before. Is it really healthy to be exposing children to material that puts them at much higher risk for mental health issues? He also took issue with my characterization of the shooter as a kid. He said, also, 28 isn't a kid anymore, and I call everyone a kid. The shooter was 10 years into legal adulthood and beyond the accepted age to have a fully matured brain. Her support structure clearly let her, the community, and the victims down, but at that age, she is still responsible for what she believes and how she acts. Oh, I totally agree. It's just a young person, right? But yeah, I mean, I think it's a mentally ill person. I think anyone who commits a school shooting has to be mentally ill, but that doesn't mean that they're not competent to stand trial and that they're not competent to understand the consequences of their actions or that what they did was wrong. There's an important legal distinction there. You can be crazy, but you can still be found able to stand trial. H said, most people that I know don't care if someone's transgender. It's the shoving it down our kids' throats is what angers people. Tend to agree. Sue, you had a really interesting point, and I had to go actually look at the cover, the media, more of the media coverage, and you were totally right. Sue said, what I find fascinating about the Nashville media coverage is how all of a sudden it's okay to dead name and preferred pronouns are out the window. And that's totally true. So the transgender community calls it dead naming when you use the name that they were given at birth or that was associated with a gender they no longer identify with. But the media was doing that. They were dead naming all over the place and weren't sticking to, I think, their preferred pronouns, but they were saying her, which, to be honest, it's a murderer. I really don't care if anyone's offended by them being dead named or their wrong pronouns. Like, they're dead and they killed children and adults, innocent adults. And so, but it is interesting how the media is like, oh, you can't do that. But in this case, it's fine. So a little interesting point. All right. As I said, this is actually the last time we're doing a Friday show, which is kind of sad, but I kind of like it. I mean, Friday shows is tough, I think, for people on Fridays that are just jumping into their weekend to make an hour of time. And so I think adding shows, moving Sunday to Thursday with the Sunday show being exclusive for subscribers, more of a long format kind of chill show, I think is going to be good. And so we will, for non-subscribers, well, for everyone, the first show of this kind of revamped lineup is going to happen on Monday at noon. We wanted to do it a little earlier in the day so that people who listen to the podcast can listen on their drive home and it's up by then. And so as opposed to posting it in the evening, we're going to do it live. Welcome your feedback over the next few weeks on how that's going, both the content, but also technically speaking, whether it's easy for you to access, easy for you to watch, easy for you to comment on. We'll be answering questions live and reading comments live in the show as well. So I hope you enjoy it. Thank you all for your support. Thank you for your help in growing this mission and this movement to give common sense a comeback. If you would like to become a subscriber, if you enjoy the show but just haven't pulled the trigger for $5 a month yet, we'd love to have you join us. Patreon.com/undivided. Or you can become a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com.